It took all day.
Say Merry Christmas, Papa.
See the presents?
I love you, Father.
I love you too.
Now, come on, children. Let's move back and give your father some room.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge to say goodbye to 2019.
This is Tyler Orton going boldly into 2020.
Oh, wow. And we're here this week to talk about the best, worst, weirdest, wildest moments of 2019, a sort of celebration to the year that was for Star Trek. We've done them every year, and they're a lot of fun.
Yeah, Cam, I think every single year you and I say, this is the best year yet since we've been doing the podcast. And so let's get that out of the way.
It wasn't the best year yet.
No, I would say probably 2014.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right before we started the podcast.
Yeah,
really.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like February.
But look, it's we get to anticipate Star Trek Picard, Star Trek Lower Decks. They'll both be premiering in the year 2020.
Yeah.
We also have season 3 of Star Trek Discovery going forward in 2020 as well. We're never going to have more Star Trek content coming on there. My prediction is that we'll have at least maybe one Star Trek movie with some news to share in 2020 as well. So
if not the movie, we'll have, genuine big news to announce, hopefully.
Not
to announce, but to talk about.
We're getting the scoop.
We'll make our own Star Trek film. It'll be like that Western in Trekkies 2.
Yeah, I just want to say right here, it's going to be called the Showdown at Axanar. Cam, every year we do the I think we also kind of reflect on the year that was in 2019. For you, I mean, what was maybe kind of a highlight before we get into our best of clips? What was maybe kind of a highlight for you doing the podcast or kind of exploring just fandom as a Star Trek fan?
This was an interesting year. I was thinking a lot about it at work today because there's been past years we've done these best ofs where we would be like, oh, this was the year of the 50th. This felt like a big year. Oh, this is the year Discovery launched, the first new Star Trek on the air. How exciting. This year, I was really thinking about it. It almost feels in some ways like a bit of the calm before the storm. We had content that came out that was great. We had Discovery Season 2. We had What We Left Behind. We had Short Treks. Like, we genuinely had content out there. But a lot of 2019 felt like kind of prepping for Picard coming along, Lower Decks coming on, like really like the big onslaught of what CBS All Access was going to be heading towards in the future.
Yeah. And pure content-wise, for me, I'm looking at highlights from Star Trek Discovery Season 2 when it comes to, like, If Memory Serves, that was a great one.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about the way that they introed the show with the previously on Star Trek, and you get previouslys to The Cage.
Yeah.
And it's like, that is what we need to see more of, is like Star Trek Discovery having fun within the Star Trek universe. I think they have moments of kind of really getting what it should be about, you know, and that's what I look forward to more in Season 3.
Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2.
I was going to say the parting between one Spock and one Burnham was just maybe kind of the emotional highlight for me of all of Star Trek in, 2019.
And probably the action filmmaking, like, height of Star Trek we've seen so far on TV. So, like, to see Star Trek continue, 50 plus years on, still pushing forward, still trying to do new things, was really exciting to see.
I'm still partial towards the action scenes in TNG Season 3, The Survivors.
Like the chair rocking or something.
Worf, security officer Worf sipping tea inside of the house. The other thing that was just very exciting, gives me a lot of hope, though, that panel that we attended in Star Trek Las Vegas at the big convention there with the Star Trek Lower Decks writers.
Yeah.
They told us everything that we really wanted to hear as fans, and that they're not making fun of the universe. They're having fun within the universe. And honestly, like, the premise that they set up for us, where it's a ship that specializes in second contacts, it sounds funny.
Yeah.
And
Lower Decks to me feels like CBS All Access's, like, stealth weapon. We don't quite know how it's going to hit, but, like, fans seem very mixed on, I'm not as excited about that one. Picard's the one they're all talking about, or even Discovery. And I really do think this one could come out of nowhere and really take people by surprise.
I worry that fans are going to be disappointed by Picard, not because I don't think it's going to be good. I do think it'll be good, but I just wonder if fans have kind of this image of Picard in their own brain, and if we see something other than him hanging out in his gray sweater, drinking Earl Grey tea in the ready room.
He's in like a souped up like go-kart, like in Masterminds.
With a mustache and everything. Yeah. Like, people are going to be a little bit like, wait, what's this? I think, if we're just being honest, I'm not talking about Star Trek fandom, but I'm talking about, like, you know, general TV audiences and movie-going audiences. They like what's familiar.
Yeah.
And I think going into this, Patrick Stewart doesn't want to do what's familiar, and I don't think the writers are interested in doing what's familiar. I'm sure there's going to be, like, some fan service and some shout-outs, but I just want...
we've seen from the trailers there will be.
Oh, yes, of course. You know, so I just want fans to kind of maybe temper expectations and be prepared for a brand new Star Trek series that happens to have the lead character who might be one of the most beloved... who is one of the most beloved lead characters in all of Star Trek.
Yeah. I am very curious about Picard, because I do think... it is a really tough ask to expect, you know, in this case, it's not even the original creators. It's new creators to come in and revive a character and that character's world in a way that satisfies people. It can really go wrong. We've seen it go wrong a lot.
Yeah.
And so I'm just praying this isn't a case of that, because it would just be a bummer for everyone, I think. I think Picard does have the benefit, though, of the fact that Nemesis disappointed a lot of people. It's kind of like, well... he didn't go out that strong, so we can still go back. And hopefully, even if it's, you know, not great, it still might be a better ending to the character when we get to the end of the Picard series than what Nemesis gave us.
Who do you think would be the safest choice of all the kind of relevant big Star Trek characters to have just given a spinoff to? You know, I don't think Picard is a safe choice at all. Which I think... you know,
he's the most marketable choice, though.
Oh, for sure. But it's why it boosts my anticipation of the series, because I don't want people to do safe things. And maybe we can get into that a little bit later on at the end of this episode. Maybe we can talk about the new Star Wars film.
Sure, yeah. I'm trying to think, who's the safest? Worf feels like the safest to me.
Pretty marketable.
Yeah, very marketable. You know... you could say a Data, but I don't even know if that makes sense post-Nemesis.
They should have done a Data prequel, him at the Academy. He should have been starred in the Starfleet Academy series that they had proposed like 18 months ago, and we've heard zip all since.
Right. I don't think I would say a spinoff for like a Voyager or a DS9 or an Enterprise character feels safe to me, because they aren't as
Seven
marketable.
Of Nine?
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good one. Yeah.
That's what my... I only asked you that question so I could give you my answer.
Right.
You
know, of course.
But I think Seven of Nine could have been a safe one.
Right.
I don't think that there is kind of this fandom that would have attacked the series for doing some wild things with Seven of Nine.
Right.
You know, and I think also the fandom, though, they're kind of excited to see Seven of Nine grow as a character. Mm-hmm. Jeri Ryan, we got to see her at the Star Trek convention, and she was talking about finding the voice of Seven, you know, 20 years later.
Right,
which I thought was just an intriguing thing, and I don't know.
I am glad that what they're doing with Picard, though, seems kind of strange. When you look at the trailers for Picard, it looks like definitely an interesting show I can't wait to watch, but we're not seeing, you know, the classic shots of Picard on the bridge of the Enterprise-E. It would have been so tempting, I think, for maybe a less imaginative creative team, just be like, well, you know what? It's been a long time. Picard's still on the Enterprise-E. He's got a new crew, and we see him mentoring this new crew. And you know what? People would have shown up in probably the same amounts that are going to show up to watch Picard.
Yeah.
And I just really appreciate that they didn't do that. They didn't try to remake past glories.
No matter what, though, I think CBS has a hit on its hands, because after everyone finishes up doing their archival library viewing of Star Trek The Next Generation on like CBS All Access, they're going to be intrigued by what is next with Captain Picard, or retired Admiral Picard in this case. You know, like it's like you can't go wrong here dumping all this money that CBS is doing so far.
When you think about this year, this 2019 year, how much in your mind is really just the tracking the Picard progress? Like, I feel like a lot of it was. I feel like we talked, you know, a lot on the podcast about the trailers and the ongoing developments. To me, this really does feel like a year that was very much counting down to this show, which originally was going to actually air this year.
Yeah, that's true. I would say from July onwards, it really did occupy a lot of my thoughts. But prior to that, though, it was very much, and I think you know, listeners will figure it out as we go through our best stuff, but it was very much Discovery centric in my mind for the bigger chunk of the year.
Yeah, the Captain Pike character and Spock coming back into Discovery really did have a massive impact on not revitalizing Discovery, but giving it a new energy in the wake of losing the Lorca factor and stuff like that at the end of season one. I think there was a lot of questions of, well, what is the Enterprise going to bring to this show that's interesting? And it ended up giving us two characters that really did feel rich and blended with the cast of Discovery incredibly well and just really, I think, elevated the interpersonal dynamics of the show to a new level.
I think the way that you described it, new energy, I think that's perfect. And maybe if we want to kick off our segments now, why don't we talk about one of our favorite Pike moments that we discussed here. A bit of an ode to a classic artist, as we are all familiar with.
For sure.
Hey, speaking of great songs that we can throw back to, I never in my life thought that I'd hear characters from Star Trek singing David Bowie in an episode. Like, I love that moment.
We had a shout out to Prince as well.
And well, we've gotten Beatles shout outs. You and I usually complain about, like, why is it everybody in Star Trek seems to, like, be
old
obsessed?
Jazz?
Well, yeah, be obsessed with, like, the 20th century. Yeah. The thing is, if you're actually doing, like, cool, badass, like, artists, you know, like the Beatles or Prince or David F. and Bowie, okay, I'll totally just go with it. And I love it. Let's be honest, like, it's literally Space Oddity that they are singing there. Like, that is like the perfect sort of Star Trek song. And I was so disappointed that the credits didn't close out with, this is ground control to Major Tom.
I have a question for you. You're a big Bowie fan, and I'm a big Prince fan. Like, and I've noticed since Prince has died, like, the licensing for his music has kind of opened up a lot. To the point where, like, I was seeing it in, like, was it Kingsman 2? And I'm like, there's no way Prince would have licensed, you know, his music to Kingsman 2 if he'd been alive. I'm curious, do you think Bowie would have licensed this if he was still around?
So he was a huge Star Trek fan.
Okay.
I think he would have loved it.
Okay, cool.
You know, but I'm thinking back, and I'm trying to do the math here. There was, so Space Oddity, the best use of it that I've ever heard or witnessed in TV was in one of the final episodes of Mad Men. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, I kind of stole my idea for Star Trek, where, like, there's kind of this great sequence at the end where, like, you kind of have that song, you cut to credits. It's really fantastic. I think Bowie may have still been alive.
Okay.
During that part of Mad Men. I could be wrong, but I think he was actually okay. As long as, like, a good quality product, he's okay with, like, licensing out, you know, his music. So
I think the reason Star Trek's always avoided mentioning kind of pop culture musical artists is because they were always scared it was going to become dated, you know, like that Rod Stewart song.
If you want my body and
well, I was thinking Faith is a Heart, but
oh, okay.
But thank you for that. But you know, I think that
I should have been doing it as like the Groundskeeper Willie version.
But I can totally understand why they were always scared of that, because you don't want to mention something that people ridicule years later. Like, imagine, you know, if they'd, like, mentioned Limp Bizkit or something, or like, on the Enterprise.
Or if it was TNG and they're talking about, you know, that great artist Tiffany?
Yeah, or Milli Vanilli.
Yeah.
And then you're like, uh-oh. Yeah, so, like, I can totally understand. But I think Discovery has actually been very, very smart about the artists they pick, where you kind of go, yeah, I could see if any artists are going to last, they've done a good job at choosing the ones that have a really good shot at it.
And in all fairness, they're not like picking artists that blew up in 2015.
Right.
They're picking people that their legacy continues on.
Exactly,
so,
yeah.
So what do you think would be the next artist, Cam? I'm going to throw this question. Well, based on like the three big ones that they've...
Well, we've had four because we had Wyclef Jean too.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're forgetting about... Al Green. That was...
Of course. Yeah.
Al Green. So we kind of get an idea, although I don't know if I put Wyclef Jean up there with, say, Al Green, Prince, and the Beatles. He's not quite there.
Maybe not, no.
But what, just based on kind of their curation so far...
You know, like, the artists that kind of jumped to mind, there was two that, and I don't know why, this completely just popped in with no thought, really, but I thought of Elvis, and I thought of Aretha Franklin.
Okay, I can totally buy Aretha before Elvis.
Yeah, I don't think Elvis is the one they're going to be like, we've got to do a tribute to Elvis.
Who's doing the impersonation? Is it
Pike? It's got to be Pike.
It's Pike.
It is big time Pike.
Well, I can't wait until Star Trek finally does its musical episode.
A hologram pops up. He's like, I'm all shook up. You're welcome, folks.
Why don't we just end the podcast
yeah,
now?
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, Cam, we just got our turtles out of that, of course.
And our guffaws.
And I think listeners will have to realize, based just on all of our previous best ofs, mostly this is just an excuse for us to make ourselves laugh.
Yeah.
But we'll have more serious moments throughout this. But just get prepared for us just funny moments where we just chuckle to ourselves quite a bit. So,
and one of our go-to means of making ourselves laugh is pop culture references that aren't related to Star Trek. And, you know, we talked about music and Pike. Let's talk about music and a different series.
What would the kids have been listening to? 2001.
New metal is pretty much fallen off. I think we've got the rise of pop punk at that point.
Well, let's hope. So, like, emo sort of stuff, you know?
Yeah, I think, like, well,
You know what? It'd be like, say, White Stripes and Strokes were, like, coming on pretty big. So, you know, maybe
the Vines.
The Vines,
yeah.
Sure. The Hives, you know, that could have been one as well. So, it would have been kind of the, that New York scene, you know, sort of deal, like post-punk sort of stuff that we could have gotten instead. So
that or Avril Lavigne. Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
Which one's the skater boy of the crew?
Is Hoshi Avril?
Sure.
Okay. So who's the skater boy? I think it has to be Phlox.
Is Phlox the skater boy? That makes about as much sense as anything.
Because she said, see you later, boy.
That's true enough.
That's about as much of the lyrics as I can recall from, you know, almost 20 years ago.
Now, I am curious, though, with the opening theme of this show, what do you think of the version that we get for the first two seasons, where we see here, obviously, showcased for the first time, which is more of it really reminds me a lot of, like, the Diane Warren, like, compositions for, like, Armageddon, where it's that, like, you know, that Aerosmith song.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it definitely reminds me of that.
I think the Aerosmith song is better, though. Like,
I don't like it, but I think I'd agree with you.
Yeah, I don't know, like, I think they're both bad.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think I prefer the new version, just because it's a little bit more up-tempo.
Right.
But, I don't know, like,
it's kind of like
Cam, this is, like, we're kind of splitting hairs here. It's kind of like, you know, they both suck.
Yeah, yeah, it was a really bad note to start your pilot off on.
But the thing is, like, if the whole idea is, like, this ain't your daddy's Star Trek.
Right.
And you're most known for having, like, the cheesiest, lamest dad rock song.
Yeah.
Like, where are you at right now, guys?
Was it ever a good idea to use a popular song?
No.
Yeah, I think they should have just gone orchestral.
You know, the one other thing that you could have done, though, and I can't believe we didn't think about this before, but, you know, JJ finally gets it into canon with Beastie Boys' Sabotage, you know?
Right.
I would have loved it if the introduction was all of the characters, but it was themed like the Sabotage music video.
Right.
It was just like Jonathan Archer with like a big mustache on and like Hoshi whipping off sunglasses and like Reed like banging his hand on the interrogation table, you know, like that would have been the most amazing opening sequence like in Star Trek history. Again, I just can't wrap my head around those decisions made in the mid-2000s.
It was a wonderful time to be alive.
It was pre-smartphone. I really think smartphones and social media have kind of ruined humanity to a certain degree.
Bad era for Blockbuster movies, though.
I love going to Blockbuster Video myself. You know, I remember, I think their plan to fight Netflix was to introduce like more candy into the aisles and start selling cell phones at the stores.
Well, it almost worked.
Almost worked, yeah. Well, a thing that almost worked as well, the short treks. Well,
yeah.
No, I think they did better than almost worked. I think a lot of them worked quite well.
Yeah.
And, you know, this came at the tail end of 2018. Maybe we had a little recency bias, so we didn't include this moment. But from our brightest star discussion, I don't know, we kind of brought up some funny highlights that we had in 2018. Pretty much kind of what we just recapped from our 2019 highlights as well.
Yeah.
I'm curious because when Patrick Stewart came out on stage in Las Vegas and we were able to witness that, very surreal moments.
It was.
He said, yeah, we don't have any scripts.
Was that the moment I was the most excited in 2018? It might have been.
It might have been. What about your, like, ecstatic. Your Fandry encounter?
Oh.
You're pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, you know, the Picard one, it was like spontaneous leaping to my feet.
I saw you.
In pure ecstasy.
I know. I think my highlight, though, was winning Star Trek trivia and in front of Awashikin and Detmer. Like,
right.
That was pretty cool. Two, like, very nice actresses, and I got to totally ham it up in front of them. So.
And get cropped out of a photo on StarTrek.com.
That was wonderful. Somebody at StarTrek.com, actually, after I won, came up to me and asked me for my full name, where I was from. There's a photographer I saw taking a lot of pictures of me with all the actresses. And then they cropped me out, and they didn't include my name or anything. It's like, oh, okay. Not that I was offended, but I was just like, well, you kind of got my hopes up. Like, making it onto StarTrek.com. Like, could you imagine telling this to, like, 12-year-old Tyler in the mid-1990s with his Star Trek Voyager fan site that yeah. one day, kid, you'll be on StarTrek.com, and then having that dream crushed. Oh, well. Oh, wow.
That was so amazing.
Okay. Anyways.
Doesn't it make it so much funnier, though, that they did crop you out?
Oh, this is a way better story than like yeah. me actually making it on StarTrek.com.
Yeah.
So maybe I can make it onto one of those polls, like saddest fan dreams, you know. Anyway, yeah, so.
There's no way you're the saddest fan dream.
No, no. There is that guy who made a t-shirt that said hashtag Fandry on it.
So. Oh.
Just kidding. Well, Cam, Short Treks, not the only content that mm-hmm. we've gotten from Star Trek in the last year. What We Left Behind,
yeah.
the documentary where you were, you know, featured quite prominently.
Yes, I was.
And then Tyler, to a much lesser degree.
That's right.
You know, but I was, you and I were both still featured in this documentary. Was just absolutely thrilling to both of us.
Yeah, I mean, the experience of just seeing in the theater was so magical. And that was just, you know, the cherry on top of the cake.
Well, even like, I would recommend everybody just go listen to our whole episode. We actually did, I think, multiple episodes, like recapping both our yeah. streaming experience followed by our movie theater experience. And that yeah. movie theater experience that we had, it was a packed theater.
Yeah.
Multiple screenings in Vancouver. Not all cities got multiple screenings, but it was a packed theater. And it was just kind of almost a surreal sort of thing where you have this energy from the crowd there where you know that the people that are going to see mm-hmm. a Star Trek Deep Space Nine documentary in a theater on a yeah. Friday night,
yeah.
you know, it's kind of, we're all kind of in the same tribe here.
I think it was maybe on a Monday night or something, too.
You know, yeah, you're right.
Like, I think it was on a week, you know, like a weeknight.
It was a weeknight, yeah. And it was packed.
And it's funny because I think for most people, if you ask them what 2019 in Star Trek was, they're going to say something to do with Discovery. Because, you know, of course, it held such a prominent place in Star Trek this year. But I think for me, this was the most like wonderful experience of Star Trek related.
Yeah. So why don't we kind of touch it off with some of our favorite memories from that?
The thing with DS9 is you have Iris Stephen Bear, who's very much like the ultimate cheerleader for his show, really, in that like he was the one helping get all this together. He oversaw this project. He co-directed it. He was passionate about telling the fans all they could about DS9. And I mentioned this in a Instagram post I made about this movie, the experience that we saw, and that like I've rarely seen a creator of something seem to so understand what fans love about his creation. Mm. Like so often, you know, you'll have someone who makes a hit movie or something and they're talking about, yeah, we think the fans would like this. And it's like, did you understand what people liked in the first one? Or like they learned bad lessons. That happens all the time across the board. But it seems like Iris Stephen Bear understands the fan culture surrounding the show better than just about any creator I can even think of.
How much does the fact that he's had 25 years to reflect on it help?
I would say maybe. But there's also the fact, you know, you look at Gene Roddenberry, right? Like he writes that original series. It's genius. But then you look at what he's doing with some of the early TNG and even the motion picture, like did he understand what fans
sure.
liked in Star Trek?
Yeah.
And he had 25 years.
Yeah.
I just think it tends to be the personality. does George Lucas understand what people like in Star Wars anymore? I don't think so. And Ridley Scott definitely doesn't know what people want in an alien movie. So it just seems like Ira Steven Bear just has the right personality or the right perspective, and maybe always did. He just seems like a very... He seems like a down-to-earth guy in a lot of ways. Someone who would actually talk to fans and actually listens to what fans are saying.
Well, I mean, for listeners who may not know, like, I got to have an extended conversation with him at a convention, like, more than once. Like, I remember he was doing a panel, and he was supposed to be up on the stage.
Yeah.
And he kind of looked around. He's like, do you guys want to go get a coffee? Yeah. And he walked to the back of the room where they're serving coffee, and he bought every single person who wanted a cup of coffee or a cup of tea that beverage.
Right.
And he just said, so I don't know, let's just stand in a circle and just throw some questions at me. And so we're all huddled. I got to talk to him about past tense of all episodes.
Yeah.
Maybe I was the one who influenced its inclusion in the documentary. But, you know, and then a couple nights later, Scott Hardy, our good friend of the show, he and I, we went up and we were wearing our Deep Space Nine sweatshirts, and we got photos taken with him. And then I spoke to Ira Steven Bear at length about, like, working with Iggy Pop.
Yeah.
It was just like he, like you said, he's down to earth. I think he wants to be connected to the fans. But I also wonder, okay, did the fans know at the time what they needed or wanted from the characters? Did they appreciate it at the time, or did that grow over the years? You know, I would say it took me a couple years for Deep Space Nine to become my favorite series,
though. Right.
But once I think I was hooked by season five, that's when I knew definitively it was my favorite Star Trek series.
Well, they say never write for the fans.
Yeah.
That never works out well.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. And I think he stuck to that because, you know, throughout the documentary, he's reading some of the hate mail they got on the air and having the cast members read that stuff too. And yeah. But
what did he say about it when I think it was either Rene Bergeron or Armin Shimerman said, like, can you actually read that?
Oh, it was
like,
Aaron Eisenberg.
Aaron Eisenberg.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What did, do you recall what Ira Steven Bear said?
He said, like, he thought it was great. It means we touched a nerve. It means we were doing something that was working.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, some people were really pissed off.
You don't want to write kind of the vanilla stuff that doesn't get a reaction from one people one way or another. And
right.
I think, you know, that's what they did best on Deep Space Nine. They were telling stories that mattered. They're telling stories that still resonate, and they're doing that through the lens of these amazing characters. And I think that's what they captured in a way I could have never hoped for, you know, going into this documentary. And I was so blown away by this.
Well, Jeffrey Combs mentions, you know, that this was the first Star Trek show that had the journey that was internal. Like, it was all about the characters and their evolution. And those types of stories are timeless.
Okay, so those are some of our favorite memories.
And now some of our less than favorite memories.
Well, it was mostly kind of the mind-boggling stuff where, like, Kim, for this next moment here, Saints of Imperfection, I think it ranked at last on both of our rankings for Star Trek Discovery Season 2.
Yeah.
It was the return of Hugh Culber, a character that we really, really liked, but the writers just didn't know what to do after they killed him off unceremoniously in season one.
Right.
And I think you took a very clinical approach.
Yes, not what the writers want someone to do. They want you to just go, okay, I'm along for the ride. And I was not along for the ride, damn it.
That episode, Saints of Imperfection.
Yeah.
It was like a flaming dumpster fire of an episode right there.
Tyler, let's track the journey that brought Culber back to us.
Oh, God.
Because this is where it gets really interesting to me.
Okay.
We get Culber dies in season one, right? Now, it's Stamets's kiss that transfers, like, spore energy to his body.
I thought
correct?
It was his teardrops.
Or his teardrops, either one.
Yeah.
Whatever it was.
His teardrops, for sure.
Okay. transfers it to Culber. Now, this somehow sends him into the spore drive, correct?
No, I don't think that's correct.
Well, it's like your energy. It transfers his energy into the spore, like into the mycelial network. Sorry, yeah, mycelial network.
I think the way that he phrases it, transferred his essence, into the mycelial network.
Right. Yeah. Now, then the beings of the mycelial network built him a body. When he's there.
I think so.
Yes. Or, that is what they said.
Did the beans build him a body, or did a body manifest because his essence had been transferred into the mycelial network?
And now May actually says we built him a body.
Okay, the fact that you and I have both gotten, like, pertinent details wrong so far just shows you how confusing
this is. Oh, I was taking notes on this one. And then this body could not be absorbed into the mycelial network.
Okay.
Because he found the, like, the yee trees or whatever they're called.
Yeah, there was bark. I remember there was, like, poisonous bark.
So then he covered himself in the poisonous bark of these trees, Then they became convinced that he was a monster and was going to destroy their network. But then, fortunately, Tilly had become infected with this, you know, had found this sample of dark matter.
Well, yeah.
Right? In the asteroid. That had then allowed May to come into Tilly's presence as this...
is because May had originally, back in season one, fallen into her hair?
Shoulder hair, yeah, one or the other. Yes.
And then the black matter triggered the manifestation of May in front of Tilly.
Correct.
Okay.
And then they separate the two of them through that Ghostbusters device, which then leads to this cocoon creature, which is a transporter into the mycelial network. Correct?
I'm following you.
And then May is going to take Tilly into the mycelial network through this transporter, where to help solve the problem of the monster.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's tough to get Culver back out of there. But they use said transporter once again to get him out.
To reconstitute his matter in this universe.
Correct. And he comes back with a shave and a good haircut.
But he's a shaken man. He doesn't have the scars that he used to have because he's completely reconstituted. He doesn't feel like the same man.
Now, this journey on a writer's board, this is quite a journey for Culver, Tyler. Like, does this make any... When you really break this down, this gets really, really, really convoluted.
Cam, I said earlier, like, plot is not Discovery's strength.
Yeah.
And, like, the fact is, like, I think we were watching it week to week going like, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. But honestly, if you break it down like that... It doesn't sound like sci-fi. It sounds like magic.
Cam, I'm still not along for the ride there.
But what a ride it was nonetheless, I guess.
Yeah. Look, we actually got to do a lot of these, you know, Star Trek Enterprise two-parters throughout, especially during like the last like 3-4 months of the year.
Yeah, we were really trying to cram them all in before Picard. So.
Yeah. So, but it was fun because I change my position on a lot of them. I think like second viewing or just having a little space between, you know, a few years space between viewings, it really helps you out, give you some perspective. And I think Affliction and Divergence, the Klingon two-parter in season 4 of Enterprise, it actually gave me a lot more appreciation for what they're actually doing in an episode that would otherwise be kind of problematic in that they're trying to explain some retconning that may have just been left forgotten.
Right.
But you and I actually had like a very, very profound, interesting discussion about fictional aliens. Profound discussion about
like,
fictional aliens.
This wasn't necessarily like our best episode for taking the two-parter apart piece by piece and analyzing it like we do with some of them. But it really was a great springboard for delving into Klingon mythology in a way we'd never really done before. We did our evolution of Klingons, but not like this.
No.
It's a mess, Cam. Continuity with the Klingon look is a mess. I'm sure it can be... It's been justified in my head somehow, though, with different mutations triggering different things. And I think it is interesting in the very fact that there is a distinct look in between Enterprise, Discovery, TOS, and TNG. And I think if you work through it chronologically... I don't know, maybe it makes sense that like Klingons continue to experiment and they kept triggering different genetic mutations within that, and we eventually land where we do with the TNG era Klingons.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that makes sense. I feel like with this Enterprise story, and we'll get into that story in a second, I feel like when it's all said and done, you can at least bridge it in your head, like, okay, that makes sense as to how we got to TOS. Yeah, I got to do some leaping over some logical gaps there. But you know what? I'm okay with it. But yeah, Discovery really is the fly in the ointment where you go like, oh, boy, we didn't even have like a, you know, flat foreheaded Klingon in Discovery anywhere.
But if they never address it in Discovery, I don't really care.
I don't care either. I don't want to like continue this for decades further, just spinning around the drain trying to explain Klingons in the original series where they didn't have money for makeup.
Well, and then they also had the Kelvinverse look. That took place concurrently with the TOS era.
Yeah.
And then that was different. That was closer to the TNG look, except they had like piercings in their ridges. And Cam, it's a mess. It is just an utter mess. But it's kind of fun for fans to pick it apart. And I don't think we're nearly as down and negative on it as maybe a lot of fans out there who think, oh, you're ruining continuity by having all these different looks. I don't know. Think about it like a comic book, you know, like superheroes have different looks and styles.
Sure. Different artists come on board.
Yeah. And like, maybe it's just plain old retconning. Maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
I mean, when I watch the original series, I don't really get too hung up about whether they have the ridges or not, especially when I'm watching an episode like Day of the Dove, where you have Kang, and he so much feels like the Klingons we would get going forward, the ones who have that real honor code. In my head, I look at him as a Klingon. I don't go, well, he doesn't have forehead ridges, so this isn't the same.
Yeah,
it's like he represents and embodies what a Klingon is to me, so I'm good with it. And yet, you know, I'll watch an episode of Discovery, mostly in season one, where you have a Klingon where they got the ridges, but I'm like, that doesn't feel like a Klingon to me. The ridges are almost beside the point to me. It's all kind of superficial. It's more about what they embody on screen through the performance and the writing.
It's funny because the TNG era Klingons, and point to somebody like Kang, I should say, you know, is it just kind of that Viking sort of motif, that like almost that big warrior, jolly sort of warrior to a certain extent? Like, I think if you've got that vibe.
But also some pathos too. Like, you can tell there's genuine, like they feel. Like, there's actual some, like, suffering and some kind of, like, that kind of wounded strength to them that they want to uphold this warrior code, but they're conflicted. Yeah. That's what really matters to me.
So, I just diverging off that, we're talking about how if we look at the Vulcans, you can really poke holes in what they are as a society, you mm-hmm. know, and how there's a lot of facade going on. I think that's very true with the Klingons. You know, there's the sort of facade that they project or they want to project to other species. And then when you dig deeper in, you know that there's just a lot of hypocrisy within it all. And it's very interesting stuff. And we get a lot of that in this one, too.
Well, I mean, there's a reason that they've been able to mine decades worth of Klingon stories.
I know, yeah. Well, Cam, the only thing that episode is missing was time-traveling Alexander Rozhenko.
That's missing from every episode, that and Paul Sorvino.
Oh, wow. We need the whole Rozhenko clan back in Star Trek Worf.
Star Trek Rozhenko. Too boldly Rozhenko, where no man has gone before.
Get out of my head, Cam. You know, I was writing CBS with these pitches before you like just gave them all away to our listeners here. Yeah, but speaking of pitches, Star Trek Section 31 seems to be a thing, something that you and I aren't exactly really excited about, although we do love how they actually turned Giorgio, Mir Giorgio, from like one of our least favorite characters into one of our favorite characters all in the course of a couple episodes.
What a difference great dialogue writing makes.
But it's like, As soon as you give somebody the best dialogue, then of course, like, you turn them into the best character as well. Like, it's like
Paul Sorvino's character.
I'm just thinking back to, like, you know, Law and Order.
Right.
You're under arrest. You know. No, but like Michelle Yeoh, like making her arch, like mm-hmm. giving her funny lines, she just like really chewed the scenery throughout. And like that was the fun thing. It wasn't actually making her do evil things that made her fun. It was just like her like making jokes and kind of like poking holes within this universe, which is kind of
like,
fun.
And almost like writing her like a campy Disney villain.
A little bit Maleficent.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And maybe a little bit of Cruella de Vil.
All that said, Cam, I don't think we quite got the same experience with the main antagonist of season 2 of Star Trek Discovery, one Leland.
No, we did not.
Let's do our obligatory Section 31 chat, because in the background on that Section 31 ship, there's a crew member wearing a sleeveless tee. Which
I did not notice that.
When you watch it again, like at the end of the episode on the bridge,
did it have a skull and bones on it?
I'm just like this is like the most goth sort of version of Star Trek we have ever seen. I was just like, okay, Starfleet in a sleeveless tee. It was amazing to me.
All their scenes are scored to Nine Inch Nails.
But I mean, guys, Leland is just looking like the most cliched sort of like
Leland is losing me.
Antagonist. You know, like he's just not interesting, is he?
How did he get to be in charge of Section 31? Like, he just seems like he's constantly screwing everything up.
He's not in charge of Section 31.
No, but
he's like the
didn't
captain.
Pike,
the captain?
No, remember Pike said, I see you're heading up Section 31.
Yes, but then he's always referring to Control.
But isn't Control like their AI that they were referring to? Now, see, that's
maybe.
I think that's what Georgia was complaining about. She's like, in my universe, I tell the AI what to do, not the other way around. I think that Control is the AI.
Okay.
That's my interpretation.
I thought she was talking about the holograms.
Like
she
the admirals.
Yeah.
She was talking about, she said AI.
Did she say that?
Because remember, the holograms said that we'll send it back to control and they'll calculate your your request to find out the medical facilities. And then she came by and said, in my universe, I gave the orders to the AI. So I'm thinking control is not an actual, group of people, but an AI, and I guess...
Like a HAL 9000?
Sort of, which seems very problematic to me. Like incredibly problematic.
Well, you're saying Section 31 isn't problematic?
Well, just from a practical perspective.
Right.
It's just okay. So, I don't know. Just the more we find out about Section 31, the dopier I think this is. They're trying to make it look all badass and great. Yeah. I think it's so dopey and,
I want a smash cut to the control at some point where it's just Daisy. Yeah. Leland
Starchild. That's what we find out.
He's got the shaved head and everything. He's flying through space in a ball of light at the end of season two.
I can't wait. So, of course, we mentioned the Star Trek Enterprise two-parters, but we did have to finish off our Star Trek Voyager two-parters. And Workforce was an episode that I had very low expectations going into. Rewatching it, I was like, this is actually a pretty good episode.
Yeah, it's a good high-concept two-parter, the likes of which you don't see a lot of, where they really go this kind of outside the norm.
But there are some things outside the norm that maybe you and I would not do in real life that's not above Tom Paris to do.
Very little's above Tom Paris.
Generally, maybe I just had such low expectations that blew me away, but I was like, wow, this is really an episode that is applicable to 2019. We're just talking about kind of the differences between the classes in society, which I know Star Trek has addressed that before, but this seems...
Going all the way back to the cloud minders.
But this seems actually even more applicable in a way that surprised me, and I was actually just struck by it. And I'll go back to other little simple things, Janeway's got a love... interest that is actually age appropriate and actually has some personality. She's getting some nuance in her decision whether to stick around in this life. She has a boyfriend for about 2 weeks and they move in together, which was curious. But does this woman want to pursue life as a captain or life of happiness moving forward? There's a lot of fascinating character stuff in this that you wouldn't necessarily expect. Cam, I agree. I think this is a very weak cliffhanger. But look, there's a very strong two-part episode later on that we'll get to that has one of the lamest cliffhangers.
Very true. Very true.
But that doesn't take too much away from me if I view it holistically. So
we do have that weird subplot with Tom and the pregnant B'Elanna.
That was bizarre. We were mocking that mercilessly just a few months ago. I cannot explain it. Cam, as a single man, how many pregnant women do you actively befriend?
And that I actively try to find them friends with children as well?
Yep.
Hang out with? And all go the time, Tyler.
Bring her to bars, insist that she comes to a bar.
I'm currently trying to build a new social app to expand on this lifestyle I lead.
You know what? Say what you will about society. There may be legs to it, so I wish you the best of luck there. Well, Cam, that's a dating app that maybe we should avoid working on at this point.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, but beyond that, we had another great appearance from a longtime guest, Dave Boris, on the show.
Always love having him on. He's always really, really helpful in making us often see things in a different light. And he's also very funny.
Yeah, that's why you've been begging him to replace me as the host of Subspace. But we had a season one discovery versus season two discovery discussion with him. Mm-hmm. I think that episode is 75, 80 minutes long or something.
We usually go long with him, yeah.
Yeah, so I look...
on the football field.
Sure. Thanks. I prefer more footy, as they call it, across the pond.
Sure.
But let's get into... Look, we could have just select one moment from this, so there's a couple here that really stood out to us. Look, you brought up Hannibal Lecter.
you
start cheering for kind of the sociopath at that point. And not that I endorse any of the stuff that she's a proponent of, but I loved watching Michelle Yeoh in this. Like, I just thought this has to be my favorite Michelle Yeoh performance, period, at this point. So.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I thought...
You're more of a Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon sort of guy.
That's great, yeah.
Oh, yeah, she's awesome.
Super cop, man. Oh, Jackie Chan.
I liked Crazy Rich Asians. You were not such a fan.
She was all right.
She was pretty good in that.
Oh, no, she is like the best scene in the movie. She's the best part. I think she should have gotten a supporting actress nomination for that movie.
Oh, there you go.
I'm kind of shocked she didn't. But
there you go, listeners.
Yeah, hot take.
And he didn't even like the movie that much.
I thought it was okay. Yeah. But
too crazy.
And rich.
Yeah. I'm not going to complete that. Anyways. But
my thought process, though, is Discovery is not a 7-season series. I think it is going to be a 5-season series. I wonder if there's maybe 1 or 2 seasons left of Saru in the captain's chair.
That would make the most sense to me.
Dispatched in some way, and it's Burnham for the final season.
That would be brilliant if Saru takes it for 2 seasons, and then a captain dies in Star Trek, and then Burnham, you know, takes over for a show.
I don't know if he can die, though, because they went to that well in A Noble for Charon with his deathbed scene, and I just think, I don't know if you can actually top that, and I think whatever...
Because that was a great scene.
It really was, and so whatever would come after that, I think would ring false, and it would not match that, so I wonder if maybe he has to, I don't know, restart a colony, a Kelpian colony or something like that in the future.
Or maybe he steps down, maybe his confidence grows to the point that he starts making mistakes.
Yeah. Maybe. Or I mean,
Cam does it all the time. Minus the confidence.
When you said about the Kelpian colony, I was thinking of Neelix going to the Talaxian colony. I'm like, oh boy, is that the plot thread we're going to go with?
David, what was your reaction to this teaser that we got here?
Well, at first I thought it was going to be a trailer that was trailers, whether it's a commercial, like it's actually a commercial.
Like a commercial for the trailer?
Those
are the worst.
Yeah, it was, and so that's what I thought it was at first. And then it switched kind of midway into this actual like serious, kind of hint at what the show is. And so I was excited about it. I thought it was an oddly done trailer. Like I wasn't like, that's not what I expected from it. Perhaps that's a good thing or a bad thing. Like the whole wine like settling down. Like it looked like a vineyard commercial.
Are you telling me that flute and vineyard does not do it for you when it comes to space-bound TV series marketing?
No, not at all. Especially when it's supposed to be, or what I assume is going to be a very cerebral show, a show about this character and choices being made and stuff. And it had none of that to me except for the last part, and it had a little dark kind of undertone at the end.
I think what they're telling you right now is this is not going to be kind of like Discovery. You know, like if you're kicking it off with vineyard shots.
Yeah.
Maybe, look, I have no doubt there's going to be some pretty breathtaking set pieces, but I think it's going to be going at a different pace here. Look, we got a glimpse of one Jean-Luc Picard. He is no longer an admiral in Starfleet. We found out that he, you know, led the largest rescue armada in history. My suspicion is it has to do with Romulus.
Yeah, I'm curious. I saw fans saying the timeline doesn't line up, but we'll see. I'm very curious.
It lines up.
Does it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, because look, the J.J. Abrams 2009 movie, it took place in 2380 something.
Okay.
That's when Romulus blows up. So Picard would have already been done his adventures in Nemesis and would have been able to lead an armada as a so-called admiral.
Okay.
Yeah. My only disappointment, though, is that I think the best thing to come out of Star Trek Generations was when one Kirk says to Picard, don't ever let them take
your
ship
away. You
love
this moment.
But, you know, it's one of the few redeeming things in that film, though.
Sure.
You know, Kirk says to Picard, don't ever let them take your ship away.
That's a great moment.
The thing is, if he is an admiral leading an armada, I think maybe that means he's taken a desk job to a certain degree, or is he, like, a fleet commander? It's unclear to me. Like, I hope that that's not a lesson that is sort of vaporized, so to speak, from what we find out through the series. But look, what they're doing, the hints that they're dropping, I'm intrigued. Let's be honest, everyone's going to watch this.
Yeah.
I think this is the best business decision that one CBS All Access could make.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're paying Patrick Stewart a mighty fine paycheck for this as well. I am intrigued. Knowing what the budget is for Discovery, which is, I think, $6-7 million an episode, which is just crazy.
I can only imagine what it's going to be like for Star Trek Picard, but I think they know that this is an investment that is going to pay off for them.
I've seen some interviews that he's done about his character, and he seems to be, I mean,
he's been doing those for about 30 years now.
Fair enough. I mean, sorry,
he's
about
like,
this.
I'm very excited about this new show I'm doing, Star Trek, The Next Generation. Well, I have good feelings.
You might know me from I, Claudius.
And Excalibur.
Don't forget Dune.
Oh yeah, he was in Dune. But interviews about this new show,
sure.
And his character. So just to clarify for everyone that we're talking about Picard. But in his interviews, he has seemed to be very he's confessed that this character, there's deeper stuff going on here. Like it seems to, and now maybe he's just saying this because he's supposed to, but it seems to be that this is an actor's role, that this is going to be a character role. And I'm excited about that because, you know, he's awesome. And Jean-Luc Picard's awesome.
I mean, he turned down Picard, you know, offers in the past just to reprise this character. You know, there was discussion Tyler and I had recently when we were talking about the Kelvinverse, that their second choice, apparently, if Leonard Nimoy turned down bringing Spock back, they were going to go to Riker with Jonathan Frakes. But we were discussing whether maybe there was some quiet conversations with Patrick Stewart, and he was like, no.
Yeah.
It would have made a lot of sense, because for a long time he did say he didn't want to play Picard again. And so I feel like if he is coming back, there's something there.
Yep.
There has to be. Yep. It can't just be like, you know, we're not quite sure. We're going to figure it out. Don't worry, Patrick. The show will be good. Trust us. I feel like they had some sort of pitch that won him over and was interesting. I still, though, whenever I watch this teaser, and I've watched it a few times, obviously, this show does not look like an ongoing series to me.
My preference would be this is a one and done series.
Yeah.
You know, it would give us closure to this character. I don't know, but I didn't get that sense just based on the trailer. What was just kind of a vibe you got?
Yeah, it doesn't feel like something that's like the ongoing adventures of Picard. It feels
if
like...
If only that was the name of it.
Well, season 2 and 3, it's all the vineyard. It's just...
It's just challenges being a winemaker.
Yeah,
you know?
It's just like he's got a staff now. He's got to squish the grapes like Lucille Ball style.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like,
they have a bad year for Merlot. It's like it doesn't get good ratings. He's challenging that.
I can't wait to see the episode where he has to stuff chocolates in his mouth during the conveyor belt scene. You
know? Oh, man.
Well, Cam, I don't have much of a segue.
Nope. But I guess we're saved by the bell.
That said, oh boy, what a season can make. Let's skip ahead 1 year and go to A Time to Stand. Let's be honest, Cam. This one literally opens with Goldacott doing the captain's log.
Yeah.
This is the very definition of a mission statement.
Yes.
And I think this is great. Sure, there's some housekeeping because, of course, you know...
You kind of have to have it.
It's Tarak Nor now. It's no longer Deep Space Nine. But you are setting up where all the characters are right now. You have the Starfleet crew plus Garak over on the Defiant. You've got Worf and Martok on the Retaran.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got Kira, Odo, Goldacott, Weyoun, and Damar all having a good jolly time. And Quark. And Quark, too.
Yeah.
On DS9.
And Lita.
And Jake.
Yeah.
And Rom. And, you know, so...
Lorne.
Lark Voorhees. Save that for the best stuff, guys.
Yeah.
Remember that episode of Saved by the Bell where Screech made like a robot?
Yeah, was it Kevin?
I
think it might have been Kevin the robot.
That's a pull. If that is true, I am impressed.
It's tragic, the things I've forgotten in my life, and yet I remember something like that.
How could I never remember math formulas? But
no
it's
kidding.
Like, it's Star Trek episode titles that have stuck in my brain.
Like, great literature I've read that is now, like, out of my head, like Faulkner stuff, for example, in university, and now it's just like... No, I remember the name of the robot from Saved by the Bell. It's so depressing.
In Tyler's Star Trek Voyager fan fiction that he wrote at age 12, of course.
But I guess the question we should ask, of course, is did Kevin know he was a robot? And would he want to know?
That is a very good question.
What do you make of the decision that Data has to make about whether or not to tell Juliana that she is an android after she recovers from that android injury, though? Like, should he tell her or should he not? Or if you were an android, would you want to know?
I think Data makes the right choice for that character's journey because with Data, it's the entire idea of he doesn't really have anyone. You know, Lal didn't work out, right? Like she fell apart, essentially. Lore, he's never able to connect with. And so it makes sense to me that, you know, Data has to be somewhat isolated for his journey. And so
it would be a little weird if suddenly we had Data's mom in the movies too. You know what I mean? Like, that's part of being a human, though, for Data, is letting her go.
They're tag teaming the operations console.
That's right, yeah.
Fiona Flanagan is action hero. Yeah.
Taking down the Borg Queen.
Nice.
But no, just the idea that he has to make the very human decision to just let her go.
Let me ask you this. If you were an android and you didn't know it, would you want to know? And you thought you're human?
No, because I don't think I'm necessarily programmed to think about those sorts of things. I mean, maybe she is, because she is the most human android we've ever seen and is going to live a human life, essentially, and die of old age without knowing. So maybe she does have those sorts of curiosities, but I think it's better for her that she doesn't.
Well, I was just curious about you, though.
Would I want to know?
Yeah.
No. Yeah. No, I don't think so. If she's, you know, she's happily married, as we see.
No. I don't care about her.
But I'm putting myself in. Are you saying, like, in this exact moment?
No, just you personally. Let's say it's 2019. I don't know. Somebody has the ability to explain to you that you are an android.
No.
Cam Smith.
No, it would be very stressful.
All right, that's all.
Very stressful.
All I was curious about that.
Right.
I'm just trying to get into your psyche. That's all.
What about you?
I was thinking about this after watching this. I thought it was an intriguing question. And I think it would probably be, like, devastating. Like, you know, like, it would be shattering to you. And what would I gain from this knowledge? Like, that's what I kept coming back to. I don't think I would gain anything, though.
You would spend a lot of time trying to figure out who created you, even if any of your memories are true.
Well, speaking of who created you, so Juliana Tamor's husband had no idea that she was an android.
Right.
So presumably she was Dr. Noonien Sung's sex bot as well.
Yes.
Okay. It's like, it keeps coming down to the sex bots.
Well, it's like his wife died, and so he created an exact replica that he was married to.
And she had tear ducts and even capillaries in skin, and like, okay, there we go. Sung, if I didn't think you were a weirdo before, I think, yes, seal the deal at this point.
Yeah.
So, anyways, we've kind of covered the spectrum of Data here. The B4 stuff, we didn't really get much out of that. And
I mean, did it feel unsatisfying because you are going so backwards? When you have this...
There's no new story to tell.
Well, when you have the Data's mom character, this is such an advanced android that's what's interesting, is the next evolution of where we're seeing these androids go. Is it really satisfying to go back to one that can't even process simple commands like holding a spoon? Like, what are we getting out of this? We were, you know, going way, 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 way back to the original series. Those androids were more advanced than this. And we were getting stories then that now feel a little outdated. Well, so, like, what do we get out of this?
No, dude, that's a knife. Take that out. Take that out of your mouth, Cam. Stop it. You're going to hurt yourself. Stop, Cam. Seriously. Well, Cam, I think you had a very intriguing answer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, we're in agreement, so that's why.
That's right.
It's the best answer.
I don't want to think, though, about Kevin being a sex robot.
get that out of my head. Too late. Speaking of sex robots, we had another great guest on our show to talk about Endgame. Again, a Voyager two-parter a feature-length episode. And so Scott Hardy, he's been a guest, three, 4 years now?
Going back.
Because we only get to see him once a year.
Right.
In Vegas, you know, the big Star Trek convention. We always love having him on the show. There's rumblings that he might come visit us in Vancouver in the new year. So I would say that his poor partner is going to have to, like, sit in the room and watch the three of us, like, talk about Star Trek for at least an hour at some point.
Probably.
While they're supposed to be vacationing here on the West Coast.
Right.
But, in the meantime, let's throw to some of our tattoo talk here when it comes to Star Trek Voyager Endgame.
Chakotay, always gold. We were told, like, I think it was more like Kate Mulgrew saying, like, well, she's the senior officer. She can't have relationships with the crew. But Chakotay can. Like, that's where I'm like, hold the phone.
I know. And this is also the fella that was getting mad at people for making out in the turbo lift.
Yeah. So that's where I'm like, it's a total double standard.
Yeah, Scott, I know you were a big fan of the Chakotay 7 stuff, so why don't you justify yourself?
I wish I could. I really wish I could give you something on that one. I mean, I'm a massive Chakotay fan. You know, the fight is one of my favorite episodes. Oh, no. I'll take that
you
back.
You have the tattoo.
Yeah. I got it when I was 16. As soon as I could, just get it on my face now.
Your parents thought it was a bad idea. Boy, were they wrong.
They've got it too now.
The weird thing is Cam has his on his lower back.
That's right.
Yeah.
As the true rubber tree people do.
I've got the full Q one now that goes all the way down my face.
Of course, yeah.
Well, Cam, I alluded to the fact earlier on in our Best Of episode that I had been pitching CBS quite a while with some of my ideas going forward.
I think since episode one of this very podcast, really.
I've got so many great ideas here. I've got some Disney Plus ideas as well. Okay. You know, watching Mandalorian, I'm like, you know, I've got some stuff that I think could work for Disney Plus. So you guys just give me a ring sometime.
No one wants your spinoff about that diner dude from Star Wars episode two.
I think the behind the counter shenanigans going on in that restaurant would be fascinating.
Well, it would be something.
Speaking of something, I want my residuals. Just steal that format where you center it around, you know, 6-7 cadets who, I don't know, they're in a study group. There's a reason for them to be together and do this teamwork sort of stuff. And you have Picard come in. He gets like, you know, three, like, just knockout scenes every single week. And I think that's a way to kind of get the, you know, again, no pun intended, the best of both worlds here, where you have the Patrick Stewart factor and you're actually becoming invested in who these characters are that make up the supporting cast.
And you could have little missions like The Good Shepherd, the episode from Voyager, where you have Picard going out on some missions with these kids we're following. And so, like, you know, you asked, would I watch a show? I would totally watch a show. It actually sounds to me, it has that optimism of Star Trek because, again, these are young people aspiring to meet the standards set by all these great Starfleet figures we've seen in the past. Like, that's inspirational to me. Mm-hmm. And it's also something we haven't seen. And, like, this is, you know, Starfleet Academy. We've seen glimpses of it. We've seen it on the show before, obviously. But we've never seen the journey from beginning to end other than a very brief journey through it in Star Trek 2009.
Right. And so, look, if this makes it to air, you know, this time next year, I just want CBS to know that I will be suing them.
Wow.
Yes. So anyways, what else that really popped out to you?
You said that so solemnly.
Yeah. I want my money. Thank you, CBS. Back to Enterprise, though. Somebody who deserves residuals, I think, for some of the great inventions such as Velcro was Mistral. Of course, he was that Vulcan featured in Carbon Creek. Remember that one in which T'Pol is telling a story about her ancestor, you know, actually crash landing on Earth back in like the 1960s?
I think it was 60s,
1950s,
yeah.
Maybe?
Yeah.
They're watching, what was it, like Three Stooges or something on TV?
Sure.
Yeah. Anyways, Mistral, he's a great character. And you and I kind of pondered whether there's, you know, spinoff opportunity.
Yeah, that was in our spinoffs episode, or our sequels episode, I should say. And we got to delve into a lot of fun characters and potential episode sequels that could happen. But this was one that was really noteworthy.
In terms of opportunistic, you know, guys, why don't we jump over to an Enterprise pick here?
I thought you were going to say, what of Lazarus?
I thought you said you're never going to mention that.
I lied.
I want to jump over to Mistral. Of course, the Vulcan featured in Carbon Creek who decided to stay behind on planet Earth, you know, back in the 1950s. I just would love to pop in once a season, see him on kind of this episodic adventure, I don't know, hitting the railways, like finding new, almost like Kung Fu or Incredible Hulk, you know, like getting pushed out of towns, you know, wherever he goes. Like,
I am Mistral. I will help you.
You know, it'd be fun to see him like kind of almost like a Forrest Gump sort of thing, like how he's unwittingly inserting himself into big historic events, you know, like I think this...
Running long distances.
Yes. And I...
Cataloging like U.S. history.
He becomes a war hero. Yeah. You know, he's operating a shrimp boat.
Sure.
Captain Joan. But like, I think this would be like, he was a fun character who was a Vulcan who really did embrace like humanity. And we got the sense by the end of Enterprise that secretly deep down, Vulcans really do genuinely enjoy humans.
They,
you know,
must.
They have to. Like, you, even Saval was saying it, like, do you think I'd be on Earth for this long if I didn't have some sort of affinity for it? You know?
Right.
And
One of my favorite lines, though, is like Archer's like, "Well, you hide it quite well," and he said, "Thank you." You know, so I think the Vulcans had an interesting journey on Enterprise, and they definitely changed and developed as we knew them, and I think Mistral was like just a fun character, and I would love to kind of pop back in after I think Carbon Creek deserves a sequel, Cam.
What is that sequel? Is it just like an episode just focused just on his character on Earth?
I think it has to be. Yeah. You know, it's just it's a one-off. It's almost like 1159 from Voyager, you know, just one of those one-off episodes. We did Off the Beaten Path, you know, yeah. A couple months ago, and I think it might have to be just one of those Off the Beaten Path episodes.
But they would want that episode to feature, I feel like, an Enterprise regular cast member.
I'll pitch it to you, Cam. Because that episode, it featured Carbon Creek featured T'Pol's grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Why not have like the ancestors of some of our main cast members? Like, I know it sounds cheesy.
No, I'm following you here. Yeah. I get the vibe. I'm liking it.
You know, but like 1950s, like Malcolm Reed, kind of great 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 grandfathers. You know. He's a Navy man or something.
Like wearing the old-timey Navy gear from Generations.
Yeah.
People just keep getting thrown off boats every 5 minutes.
Like, yeah, Mistral keeps knocking them in.
Then they have to explain why that's not funny.
Yeah. So, Cam, I'm pretty convinced this podcast is really just an excuse for us to, like, mock each other.
Sure.
Which is pretty much all we do in our friendship day to day.
Right. And talk about Anson Mount.
Well, write letters to him, and they're still going unanswered at this point, which is kind of sad.
The original Spock cadence is so much of Leonard Nimoy's regular voice.
Yep.
And so you're getting these generations of actors having to approximate the Nimoy voice because that has become the known voice for Vulcans.
Yeah. Can you approximate my voice? Do your best.
I won't even try.
Okay.
Just a high-pitched squealing noise. I don't know. But I mean, like...
Wow.
It just sounds like feedback into a microphone from where I'm sitting.
It's like Charlie Brown's teacher.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, like, yeah, if I were to try and do your voice as an actor, I'm not an actor, but that'd be very difficult. If your voice was the model for an alien race and you had other actors come in and be like, yeah, do that. And very few could do it. Like, it's very difficult.
Very few could do it.
That's right.
That's right.
But
this
I mean,
is
like...
Cam Smith, tackling the weirdest, wildest, wackiest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer.
Well, on that note, I can go home, I guess. But yeah, like, I sympathize with actors coming in to play Spock.
I sympathize with actors coming in to play... Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because to me, that would be a very steep hill to climb and to make it sound natural, which is what, especially Spock, you want to do. Because Spock does have... he's a little more laid back than like a Sovol in terms of his delivery.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Shout out to Gary Graham right there.
Sure, yeah.
So that moment that we see Number One being like pulled up by that kind of futuristic carabiner or whatever,
mm-hmm.
That just screamed like JJ Star Trek to me with like the musical cue and everything.
Yeah, and did you notice that that Michael Giacchino was the supervising composer?
No,
on this?
I did not notice that.
Yes, because I was sitting there and I heard that music cue too, and I'm like, that's weird.
Did you just say music cue and A?
I did now. And then, and then it cuts to that end credits with that like rejiggered version of the original series theme, and I'm like, are you telling me like Jeff Russo set and composed a whole new theme for this? But it also sounds very Giacchino.
But we also know that Giacchino is directing one of these short treks coming up.
I know. Yeah. And so you're telling me they're also composing this new TOS type theme that could easily be used for your opening credits on a Pike spinoff?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's really cool. It sounds just different enough, too, to work on its own without being... Yeah, it just sounds like they're doing the TOS theme.
That's why it just seems as if like CBS is trolling us with like all these like hints of a Pike spinoff. Like the thing is, why would they put in so much effort with this if this was not meant to be? Do you think like Anson Mount is flying back to Toronto?
Yeah.
For half a day's of work just to say hi, Spock.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
This guy's like out there kind of promoting a new series.
Yeah, it seems like it, yeah. I don't get it. But I would love it if they dropped it like a Beyonce album. Like, they're like, yeah, we shot this a while back. Here's 10 episodes.
Hey, you know,
You're like into the lemonade. I get it, Cam.
Sure.
So, yeah, the other thing is we also know that there's going to be a Pike short trek coming up, too.
Yeah, yeah, Lemountade. That's right.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cam, if you were an Academy voter, would you give Beyoncé the nod for best song?
For The Lion King?
Yeah.
No way in hell.
That was not a very fun
that
movie
was a
to watch.
Wallpaper song, if no. anything. Yeah. I no. mean, I don't even really like the one in the new song in Aladdin. I would give it to that over that Lion King song.
Well, you ain't never had a friend like me.
That's right.
Boom. So other thoughts.
What a weird tangent.
Yes. Look, it been a fun year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We are, I think we can kind of give you guys like kind of the down low and what the plans are for the podcast going into 2020. But we'll have a couple of our regular sort of episodes that you guys know and love coming up in the first couple of weeks of January.
We'll wrap up our Enterprise two-parters and stuff like that. Yeah.
And then we're going to be going whole hog into Star Trek Picard. We'll have kind of a preview sort of episode, I think, in January where people... We'll give our thoughts on what it's going to take to make Picard like a good series moving forward.
Paul Sorvino.
Paul Sorvino returns. You got me sold.
Right.
Then we're just going to be doing our kind of reviews for Star Trek Picard. It's unclear at this point when Star Trek Discovery will be returning to the air. I don't think it's going to be the week after Picard concludes its season finale, but it'll probably be kind of close to that. So
I was thinking maybe the spring.
But I think that's around the time that Star Trek Picard is going to conclude.
Yeah.
It'll be the spring.
Actually, I guess that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So, look, it's going to be a ton of, like, Picard, a ton of Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get our usual kind of, like, irreverent sort of episodes in there as well. But then I think we've got Star Trek Lower Decks coming up.
Yeah.
You and I, we're still debating how we want to tackle that one.
I think a lot will depend on watching the pilot. We'll probably do a standalone episode on the pilot.
100%.
And then that one will give us an indication as to what we should do going forward, is my guess.
Worst comes to worst, we might just review, you know, two or three episodes in blocks while we'll have our regular episodes in between.
Right. And I think it's going to be interesting to look at how to cover this show, because I think it's going to inform a lot of how we cover the Nickelodeon animated show whenever that starts up as well.
I can almost guarantee that we won't be doing week-to-week reviews of the children's cartoon series, but I think we'll definitely, whether it's like a, you know, blocks or maybe just a season review, we'll still have fun with that. Like, I still think that we are the audience that they're targeting just to consume everything all Star Trek. So you listeners out there, you'll get a big diversity. So it's going to be a fun 2020. I say this every year. This next year is going to be the best year yet for Star Trek since we've been doing the podcast.
It's going to be a very momentous year. And I guess we'll probably, I think there's probably a good chance we get a couple short treks along the way as well.
What kind of short trek adventure would you like to see?
Oh, boy. Well, I'm trying to think if it would tie into anything specific. Maybe,
I'm thinking that's when we get Paul Sorvino to return for, you know, Star Trek Rishenko.
Just him, like, reciting Shakespeare on the bridge of the Enterprise.
And the holodeck is, like, failing behind him.
Yeah. So. Just like, or it's just not even turned on. That would be pretty, that'd
it's
be memorable.
It's going to be the cheapest short trek yet.
So. Yeah. I wonder if we could get some short treks later in the year that are tied into maybe season two of Picard or something. The way we saw Calypso, you know, post season one Discovery, where it was alluding to something in season two, but not so specific that the show had to pay it off necessarily. I wonder if we could see something like that with Picard, just sort of little bits of world building for the future of the show.
Yeah, I've got a pitch. It's the episode where Seven of Nine breaks up with Chakotay. Like, it's a flashback. I just want to see her break his heart. That's all.
Although, that is going to be perhaps the most expensive short trek ever, because they're going to have to de-age those actors a lot, because I don't buy that Seven would be with Chakotay as long as these actors are, you know, now the way they're aged. I don't buy that they'd be together 20 years.
I would just say, if you want to make it the cheapest short trek yet, cast Tyler as Seven and cast Cam as Chakotay, and we can do a breakup episode right then and there.
It'll be a brutal, mean-spirited breakup, though.
Well, it's like every episode of this podcast.
That's right. Yeah. Venom flying.
So, Cam, maybe why don't we've been doing the Cam DeLorton report the past few weeks. There was a bit of a break because just the scheduling, the short trek, we had to do that a little earlier before the next Mandalorian episode dropped. The next episode that we have yet to review here was the prison ship one. Do you recall the name of that?
I think it's called The Prisoner.
The Prisoner. There you go.
Yeah.
Bill Burr, one of my favorite stand-ups. He was in that. It was a real fun role. It might be my favorite Mandalorian episode yet in just how episodic it is, but it's a high-concept adventure. You're introducing just this menagerie of different characters, putting them in a high-tension situation. You understand the stakes behind it.
Technically, incredibly well-made.
Well, let's think about the size of the set.
Yeah.
It must have been like a tiny little set, but it looked and felt like an enormous sort of ship that you're on, you know, like I marveled at it. It was fun to watch. The spoiler, the gag involving the door.
Oh, that was fantastic. The people
who have seen the episode, they know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It felt fun. And I think that's what they've kind of figured out here is like, let's make Star Wars fun. And that's the way you should tackle it.
Well, and it was taking elements of Star Wars and kind of mixing them up in a way we've never seen before. We've never seen like a droid-controlled Imperial ship. We've never seen a prison escape that feels like this.
Well, this wasn't an Imperial ship, though.
No, that's true.
It was a New Republic ship.
Right, New Republic ship.
I thought you were the Star Wars fan, not me.
But I should say we've seen like prison ships before in Star Wars. Always they were Imperial, I should have said, in the past. And now we're seeing the prison ship here. And it just, it's the same thing we've seen in Star Wars, but it feels so different. And that is very in stark contrast to a sequence, you know, in another Star Wars related property I can think of right now. But, you know, this one just felt so energetic and just the filmmaking was so fantastic. There's a part, you know, a shot where you see the Mandalorian in the distance and the light is flickering and he's getting closer and closer. And I just love that moment. And you can just tell that the show feels alive in a way that, you know, a lot of TV shows don't in terms of the filmmaking. It feels like they're really pushing the envelope as to what to do in a genre TV show.
Jumping over the next episode, though.
I
felt much less energized by... is it episode 9 that we're on at this point?
Yeah, The Reckoning.
Yeah.
No, this was episode 7, The Reckoning.
Okay.
Yeah. This is very much a setup for the finale episode. You know, I like seeing Carl Weathers back. I like seeing Werner Herzog.
He's always... Mando! Mando, I see you're here. Try to be quiet, Mando.
Carl Weathers is amazing in this.
He is. And Werner Herzog is as well. I mean, big personalities on this show. I really like Gina Carano on the show as well.
Come. I'm just going to talk like Werner Herzog the rest of our Mando review, okay?
Yeah. This one, though, felt very much like a big setup for the finale. Kind of like the, is it A Time to Stand in DS9 setting up for the finale of the invasion arc?
It is Favor the Bold.
Favor the Bold, thank you. That's the one I'm going to give. Yeah,
Cameron.
Yeah. I know.
Yes.
Not like I host a Star Trek podcast or anything.
Well, I know, Cameron. But look, there's some moments in it that were interesting, but for the most part, I was not really engaged with the emotional journey of the characters.
Yeah.
You know, it was nice, like, let's get the team back together.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, I just didn't feel it like I did the previous episode.
But isn't that been the story of The Mandalorian, though, in that some of these episodes feel a little bit thin, and then some of them have these like really impactful episodes, even though they aren't really driven by like deep character studies in any way, shape, or form. It's very much filmmaking related and just the hook of the premise.
Well, I'll say the most frustrating thing for me, though, is you're building up the clients, which is Werner Herzog, as kind of, you know, the quintessential villain.
Yeah.
And then you wipe him out unceremoniously, and I was disappointed by that.
Right.
You know.
This impression is definitely going down a different route at this point.
Well, thank you.
But no, I agree. Like, the problem was, I knew Giancarlo Esposito was signed for this show long ago. And so it's been kind of the weight of like, when's he going to pop up? When's he going to pop up? So there was no real surprise to me that he was behind all this because it's like, we have one episode left. Yeah. And when you see him, you're like, yep, he's a dude.
So I think we can say that we are committed to doing the Cam DeLorton report going into season 2.
Oh, yeah.
In a way that maybe we weren't committed to the Ortonville report for season 2 of The Orville.
Right. Yeah, and we'll have to come up with a silly name with the Cassian Andor show ever. The Camcian
Andor. Camcian Andor.
We've already figured it out, Cameron.
Just mangle these things. Yes.
Well, that said, Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, Cam.
Yeah.
Just for listeners out there, I'm putting it out there to you guys. I want to be honest with listeners. I prioritized seeing Cats this past weekend.
And you were dressed as the magical Mr. Mistopheles at the time as well.
I had my wand with me and everything. Yeah. No, listeners probably think I'm joking. I did see Cats
before. We went and saw Cats.
Yeah. The problem was, you and I, we bought tickets like ages ago.
Mm-hmm.
I did not realize
not to Cats.
Well, we bought tickets.
You made it sound like we bought tickets long ago for Cats. Which is just depressing, considering how empty that theater was.
Was it? Yeah, that's true. We actually there were walkouts in Cats.
It's true.
You remarked after we left, you're like, "What did these four guys sitting behind us expect when they bought tickets to Cats?"
I have no idea.
Yeah.
At a certain point, they were just like, "What the hell is this? We're leaving." I guess maybe they didn't realize it was a musical, but they still wanted to show up to see these cat people. I don't know.
But
yeah,
you bought the tickets. But like. Weeks before that,
for Star Wars, not Cats.
For Star Wars. You bought the tickets for Star Wars, but weeks earlier, I'd bought tickets to an NHL hockey game in Vancouver. And Fallen co-host Ben Myong and I, we actually went and saw that game instead of going to Star Wars. So I've yet to see it. It's probably going to be, you guys are probably listening to this like right after Christmas. So I'll probably catch Star Wars Christmas Day or maybe Boxing Day.
Yeah.
But I have seen Cats. So if people want. Want my thoughts on Cats, you can DM me at Reportin on Twitter. But in the meantime, give me a non-spoiler kind of thoughts on it, because I haven't seen it yet. I know what the reviews are like right now. And...
Yeah, and you know, I hear a lot of people saying, like, it's getting horrible reviews, which isn't really accurate. It's getting very middle-of-the-road reviews. You know, I think it's like 57%. But for Star Wars, that's not usually the case. So that
those are
makes...
like Phantom Menace sort of reviews.
Yeah. You know? Which is very interesting. But yeah, I'm just going to give a brief kind of my thoughts on it. But I think in the new year, maybe we could delve into it a bit in a another episode, because we've done that for the other Star Wars films.
We're also going to have to give our final thoughts on The Mandalorian as
For sure.
So maybe we can do that like a 1-2 punch.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, my thoughts on Rise of the Skywalkers, I just found it crushingly disappointing in a lot of ways. It's not a horrible movie. I always kind of, it's frustrating, I find, I don't know if you find this, Tyler, but like someone will come to you and be like, oh, hey, how was the latest Marvel movie? How was the latest, you know, whatever, franchise movie generally? And say you don't like it. You know, say it's like the movie Captain Marvel, which you weren't a fan of.
No.
And you kind of say like, I just didn't think it was very good. Oh, it was horrible, huh?
No.
And it's that's so not the case.
I'd be totally happy to watch Captain Marvel a second time.
Yeah.
But I just remember that first viewing, I was kind of bored.
Yeah.
It just felt very vanilla. But that doesn't mean it's a bad, horrible movie. I don't know why it is that people oftentimes have to go to one extreme or the other.
Yeah.
It's either the best or the worst that ever existed.
When really, when it comes to like studio franchise filmmaking, I don't even know if it's possible for them ever to be horrible.
Yeah.
Because I feel like to be horrible involves one of two things. One, it has to be...
Mr. Mistopheles?
Well, okay, yes. Cats is a good example. A filmmaker who's swinging away wildly.
Yeah.
And it just does not work in any way, shape, or form. That's when you get a Cats.
Yes.
Or B, a project where just there's like no real talent whatsoever. And just maybe it's driven by cynicism or just... You know, it's just like a...
Are you describing our podcast?
Partly. But it's just driven by no attempt whatsoever to really be that good at all. But when it comes to these franchises, they have a lot of very competent people in place to, you know, make sure that the movie is at least watchable in some way.
Yeah.
So, you know, all that is my way of saying that, like, you know...
Star Wars is watchable?
Yeah, like, I found Rise of Skywalker... I found it very frustrating, and I think that speaks to the fact that there's good stuff in it. Like, I like a lot of the character arcs. I think, you know, J.J. Abrams in Force Awakens did some things with Chewbacca that were fantastic. He got more out of Chewbacca than I'd ever really seen Chewbacca really do that was that interesting. And he does that again with another classic character in this one, where I was suddenly like, that character stole the movie. And, you know, there's action beats here and there that are fun. There's practical alien makeup and prosthetic characters that are incredible. So, like, the craftsmanship in this movie is great. Like, I really did enjoy parts of it in that regard. And just watching a Star Wars movie, you really do get, you know, enveloped into this world. But I found the writing of this movie incredibly frustrating. And I gotta say, it made me realize a certain difference in Star Trek fans versus Star Wars fans, which is that I tend to notice Star Trek fans get really angry about Star Trek series, for example, being prequels or delving back into material we've seen before. For example, Khan in Into Darkness, a lot of people got annoyed about. Whereas Star Wars fans seem to only demand that stuff. They just want to see all the stuff they love.
Yeah.
And this movie feels like that. It's just like, let's retreat back to all the stuff that's safe. Don't give it any sort of extra, you know, new context or anything. Just throw it out there and be like, there you go, guys. And, you know, it feels kind of like a remake of a previous Star Wars film. And, you know, it just became very clear to me when it was all said and done that they really had no vision for this trilogy. It was very much a, well, this movie's done, what now? And this is the movie, unfortunately, where the cars all just pile up. And suddenly you sit there and go, wait a second, like, what was the point of this trilogy? None of this really tracks movie to movie, and it just becomes very frustrating. And it's definitely, I think, J.J. Abrams' sloppiest directorial effort I've seen.
So you think maybe the future of this franchise might just be best left to a platform like Disney Plus, where you can have like lower stakes adventures like The Mandalorian, you know, jumping from planet to planet each week? And and I've had a very pleasant time watching The Mandalorian. It's not going to make my best, you know, 10 shows of 2019 list.
Sure.
But I can't say like I've not looked forward to watching it every single week, though.
But even just when that music of The Mandalorian kicks in,
yeah,
you feel something.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel anything like that during The Rise of Skywalker, which for me is very unusual because, I mean, I'm a Star Wars guy from way, way, way back, from when I was like 4 years old.
Yeah.
And so the fact I didn't get chills once or anything, which is very rare, you know, you can throw on even a prequel, and there is a sequence at least that will get me. And it just never had any sort of emotional impact on me whatsoever, which I found, again, deeply frustrating. But, you know, you're saying, is this
not enough Gungans swimming underwater? Is that it?
I wish.
Okay.
But, you know, you're saying, is Disney Plus the way for Star Wars to go? Maybe. I mean, I'm liking what I'm seeing for sure. I just think, thank God, cut loose this Skywalker saga. Let's just go off and explore the Star Wars universe in new ways, like The Mandalorian is doing. I would prefer they just go that route, because I just think when you're doing episode 9, there's so much to pay off. And it just gets so bogged down. Yeah. And I think just cut all that stuff free and just do whatever you want. But I do have real fears that Disney is going to be covered in flop sweat with whatever they do next as a Star Wars movie. And that's very concerning, because you could tell they were scared with this one.
Yeah.
And, well, we'll see.
All right. Well, yeah. You and I can dive into it when we return in the first week of 2020
yeah.
for the podcast, Cam.
Yes, it's going to be a very bright, shining year. But I think before we look forward to that bright, shining year, we need to look backwards at some of the most embarrassing moments that we had on this podcast with our annual blooper reel. Hello, and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between the Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, having a little... having DEFCON level. Okay. Yeah. Start again from the top.
And we have a very special guest joining us this week. Tyler, what are we going to do next time?
Okay, Cam, this is going to be a fun one. We are diving into all the alternative actors, or at least like the big ones that appeared in Star Trek episodes or movies. Ask me that again. I'm just babbling now.
Okay, so Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Cam, we are tackling best alternate actors in Star Trek. Tackling, you know, say... Take it again.
Okay, Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Cam, we're tackling... Final time, I swear.
Okay, Tyler, what are we doing next week?
This is going in bloopers. I'm sorry. Okay, go for it.
But with the Borg, yeah, they blow up the one transwarp hub. That was it. That one. What did I say?
Transwarp poor.
I did say that, didn't I?
Save that for the
bloopers. Hello, and welcome. Like the squeaky voice kid from The Simpsons.
That's what I was thinking. You like fries with that?
Start from hello.
Hello.
Do it again. Okay.
Do it again.
Hello.
Hey.
For the bloopers. One more time.
Hello.
Janine, welcome to the show.
Okay, you're going to jump in, okay? I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to say anything. Okay.
Hello.
Janine, welcome back. We haven't seen you since the wolf. Yeah, now I'm super, super loud now. Okay.
He also cut me off. Huh?
Yeah. Cam, I can't believe how you just humiliated yourself so horribly throughout all of that. It's
yeah, me.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, Cam, it's been a great year.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking forward to 2020, the next decade. We still have full commitment doing it 51 weeks a year, which is kind of exciting to think about.
And insane.
It's insane in that, like, we still have ideas to tackle with the Star Trek universe. Like,
and all these new shows and short treks and potential films just give us more fodder.
I know.
Which, thank God.
Yes. Otherwise, we'd end up like Star Wars fans, just, you know,
yeah,
bummed out about the state of the franchise.
That's right. That's right.
Although that's, I guess, our status when we started doing the podcast, where there was just nothing going on in the Star Trek franchise.
Yeah.
Was it 2014 that we started?
It was 2014. I feel like at that point, a lot of it was about rediscovering, for example, Enterprise.
Yeah.
And being like, oh, we really maybe should be taking a second look at this show and maybe elevating it higher than, you know, popular opinion was at the time. So we're kind of past that point in Star Trek of, you know, reexamining the past, and now it's all about looking at the future, which is a very different tact for especially a Star Trek podcast.
Well, speaking of reexamining the past, that's exactly what we're going to do to kick off the year 2020, Cam.
Oh, boy.
we'll be doing the In a Mirror Darkly two-parter from Star Trek Enterprise. Cam, it's on record, one of my favorite episodes, all of Star Trek. I think this was number 10 on my list when we did our top 10 Star Trek adventures period.
Yeah.
I love this one. It is doing what I think Star Trek needs to do best, which is you're having fun within this universe here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll just throw it out to you. Why don't we do maybe, you know, episode rankings of Mirror Universe episodes once we get to the end of this one. So even if you...
Okay, so Jennifer Sisko one is number one.
Obviously.
Vedic Barai will be number two. Okay.
Got you. Lorca being revealed as a predator. That's number three.
Number three. Star Trek Continues one is probably number four.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. But look, if you haven't watched the Enterprise In a Mirror Darkly episode yet, it is a complete standalone. You don't need to be all that familiar with Enterprise, even if you have problems with it. It is one of the funnest episodes of Star Trek ever made, period. I just implore everyone to watch this one before you listen to the podcast. We're going to have a ball diving into it once again.
Yeah, it's fan service done right.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's going to be so much fun to delve into. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook at facebook.com/subspacepod. Now, we talked about what we are going to do next time, but Tyler, how do they reach you on Twitter?
You can find me at Reportin, R as in Rozhenko Short Treks, E-P-O-R-T-O-N.
Okay, and you can find me at Cam V as in very concerned about Kevin the Sex Robot on Saved by the Bell, Smith.
And that's it for 2019.
Yeah, so I hope everyone has a great Christmas and a happy new year, and we'll see you in 2020. It's going to be very exciting. So until then, the arena is closed.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the marvelous, magical Mr. Mistopheles!
Transfer complete.